And welcome everybody over here on YouTube for Off the Hook Overtime. Did you make it okay, Kyle?
I made it.
All right, there you are. And we have out in Skype land, Rob, Gila, Alex, you all there? Anyone? None of you? You're moving.
Sorry, let's try that again.
Yeah.
We're here. And greetings to the 21 people who are here with us right now. Thanks, gang. We're glad you're all here. And, you know, the lag was a little confusing a second ago, which means we are live and running on YouTube. And we're muted now, so that's good.
Ad-free this week. So if you get an ad this week, let us know, because you shouldn't. And by the way, we asked people to stick around for the post-roll ads last week because we were experimenting. We wanted people to stick around for the end. We didn't have that button checked, so nobody should have gotten one of those. So that was kind of Alex, you're there.
I am indeed.
Okay.
Yep. Well, a little bit lagged, but I'm here.
All right. Well, that was something. That was one hell of an interview. Ron had so much to say, so much to share. I was just blown away. I felt so small compared to all the equipment this guy has collected over the years. And I sure hope that it's something that people who are listening are also interested in.
Just the idea of them using a conveyor belt like they use for roofing or something to get more phones into a barn, that alone, that said it all to me. Like, mm-hmm. This is just the epitome of a collection, and that he's part of a community of other collectors and is really talking up some of their life's vocation and how that's all gone.
And Kyle, you just visited the website for the first time, and you had some comments about that.
I really like it. I think we should do more websites with, sort of a minimalist, but...
it's got a 1990s look to it.
Yeah, text, mostly text and buttons format. I like the black and white. It actually reminds me, and I'm wondering if this is intentional, sort of a newspaper headline or like a...
Well, you know, when you say that, that's something that I like in a website is a newspaper look. Like Slashdot had that. I don't know if they still do, but basically black print on white background. That works. I don't know why people have blue on pink and ridiculous things like that that are very hard to read, and they just don't, you know, you don't take them seriously.
And this also, it shares some similarities with our own. I noticed that it has some buttons at the top. You have a masthead identifying.
Where else do you put the buttons? They're always going to be on the top.
It's a good format. I guess maybe we're recognizing some of our own efforts.
No, but the way their buttons look, and we're talking about the website Phoneco Inc., Phoneco Inc.com. If you go to that website, you'll see the buttons on top that kind of they look like something from the 1990s. I mean, I remember that, and I don't think that's bad.
And they function just as intended.
Mm-hmm.
It's recognizable because of that vintage.
As long as they work, yes. And there's a couple of links that don't work because, well, there's nothing there. But the links that do work seem to work just fine.
I'm going to explore this more.
Go ahead, Gila.
I did find out that there is a phone museum in Thorpe, Wisconsin, which is about an hour and a half northeast of Galesville. I kind of wonder if everybody there should connect.
Did you notice there was a Galesville, Wisconsin, and a Galesburg, Illinois? What's with the Gales out there?
Well, you know, it's the prairie. It's kind of flat. There is a lot of wind.
Uh-huh.
I get it. And
Dorothy's last name was Gale in Wizard of Oz.
That is very true. Mm-hmm. That is very, very true. The other thing for me... is that first of all, I'm incredibly thankful that we were able to do this tonight and to have that conversation with Ron. And then when Mary got on the phone, it was wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Hearing them connecting with each other in their own home network was really cool like that. And also just to hear, I don't know, the sound of my people is great because I think Well, you guys are all aware I'm kind of holding it down for the Midwesterners in this particular group. Mm-hmm. So,
not that there isn't a huge amount of love for the Midwest from all of us.
Yes.
We have great affection for that area.
But this is sounding like my grandparents and their friends, and it's, you know, I don't know Ron and Mary, but getting to hear them brought back a lot of really lovely memories at this time of year that's a lot about family and remembering and things like that. So I am thankful that we had the show tonight for so many reasons. Those are just a couple of them.
It's nice to sort of sit back and just have an hour-long conversation with octogenarians about telephones.
I feel like we could have kept going.
Oh,
honestly.
We could have. We absolutely could have, but BAI would have kicked us off. But we could. I mean, Ron has no limit in energy, apparently. He can just keep talking all night long.
I was having this impulse to slow down and try to keep up just because I had so many questions along the way. It was such a great, engaging discussion.
Go ahead, Rob.
Also, like the stories that man and both of them must have that we couldn't even scratch the surface of in the limited time we had with him. It just reminds me of how important it is to listen to stories like Ron's and preserve them as best we can. And I'm glad it now exists in our own archives, and I hope we can continue to add to it.
How did we not know about this guy until now? I mean, we've been involved in this for since 1984. And I never heard of this kind of phone collecting, which is simply amazing.
Yeah, I really have to thank the listener, and the email wasn't signed, so I won't say their name, but they sent us that story from the Wisconsin State Journal about him, which we talked about last week, and just I think with the headline was something like, you know, I saw this and immediately thought of you guys, and it's such a joy to get something like that from one of our listeners and be brought into all this, because yeah, we definitely should have known about this.
It makes you realize there's so much out there. Even if you think you know what's out there, there's so much more.
Also, just for the record, Galesville was named for Judge George Gale, who founded the city. We did have a listener suggest that sometimes Irish people are referred to as Gales, so it could be a nod to early Irish populations. Again, we appreciate the thought that so many of our overtime listeners put in and are willing to share in the chat. So again, thankful for you guys too. Thank you.
Go ahead, Alex. Alex?
Sorry. Yeah, the mute button is a little sticky today. I had so many questions for him, but I really just wanted to let him go and let him tell his story. I'm wondering, though, if he has pay phones, you know, just as much as the regular phones. Sounds like he has an interest in payphones, but I don't know if he's got like a Coca collection or something like that. Do you know, Rob?
Yeah, I'm looking at the website now on phoneco.inc.com, and there's a whole section for payphones. There's a whole section for coin-operated customer-owned telephones, as
Coca's.
You know, Coca's, payphone parts. And just even just looking at the pictures on these, I'm looking at so many things that, you know, if I had a winning lotto ticket or something, I would be taking so many of these off his hands because they are gorgeous. And, yeah, this is such an amazing collection.
He has 33 semi-trailers. That, like I said, that alone is worthy of respect. But can we just get one and drive out there and make some bids on these things? Because, boy, you know, we have a phone booth. I didn't even get to say that. We have a 1950s phone booth complete with rotary dial phone and all that. And, you know, I was impressed that we had that. But, boy, we are so tiny compared to what he has.
Someone should make a club for installing all these, and you just go there and you can make phone calls and have a lot of background noise with other people. It'll be like a public call center.
I would call it the phone farm because it is a farm already. Does he grow anything on top of all this? He lives on a farm, but is it all just pay phones or regular rotary dial phones or things from the 1800s? Very curious.
Really,
I think one of the news articles about him mentioned that this was a cleared out chicken shed that held most of these phones, or a large amount of these phones rather. And so, yeah, I think it may have once been a barn and moved on to its current purpose.
Incredible. Wow. Anything else that we wanted to talk about tonight? Because I didn't think this would take up the whole show. In fact, you know, when you book someone who's in their late 80s, you think that maybe you're going to have like a 10-minute interview at best. But this, he just kept going and had so much to say. And of course, we're all into phones, so we couldn't stop listening. And anything else that we want to bring up? Go ahead, Alex.
Yeah. Did I hear correctly that he wrote 3 books on telephones? Is there something like that?
I believe he said he has books. I don't know if they're written books or collections of pictures. I haven't investigated that deeply.
I mean, I'm really interested in that, too. If he's got some kind of catalog or, you know, the best of his collection or something like that, I'm sure our listeners would be really interested in seeing that as well. And, I mean, there's got to be something we can do with him, with Hope, in this coming year. I really think there's potential for collaboration here that could be really extraordinary.
Yeah, no, I'm open to ideas about that. It certainly would be a cool connection to have on the campus.
And if not us, many other people that are enthusiasts, that they might, you know, if their imagination is going wild with possibilities and things they've been having on the back burner regarding phones, this is the place, this is the time to really support Ron has been doing.
A whole track just for Ron. He tells phone stories for the entire weekend. He has the energy. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, on phoneco.com, on Ron's site, there is a books page, and the first entry on that is Old Telephone Scrapbook, 4th edition, in Adobe Acrobat PDF Word searchable file format. This book includes over 2,200 pages across 3 volumes packed full of pictures, charts, diagrams, and historical data, written by Ronald H. Knappen. And this is something he sells on a DVD or a USB drive.
Wow. Okay, well, all right, so an update to last week, our experiment with trying to defeat the crazy ads that YouTube is throwing at everybody. I think we learned a lot, and it was fun having listeners partake in that with us, sharing the information that they were receiving. What we did was we turned on advertising with the most aggressive setting, to see if people could figure out ways to prevent that from happening and ruining live feeds, which is what Google has been doing with YouTube. I had a particular gripe with virtual rail fans, where I have live feeds of trains. It might sound silly, but it helps me relax, especially if I'm writing or working on the magazine. Just having these occasional passing trains going by is very comforting. And to have them constantly interrupted every 5 minutes with some ridiculous deodorant ad from Google, it's really perplexing. And the solution of paying Google to stop doing it doesn't work, because you have to register, you have to have a maximum number of connections. It's all sorts of restrictions once you do that. I discovered by accident. And actually, this was related to what we were doing last week with the show. Some people were getting ads, some people weren't getting ads. I noticed that I was able to defeat the ads if I simply brought the live stream back 3 hours. So I did that, and I didn't get any ads for the entire week. They started again today. I don't know why they started again today, but and also the video at some point caught up somehow. It like just stuttered, and all of a sudden it was live, and I still didn't get any ads. But today that ended, so I brought it back 3 hours again, and again no ads. So that means something. Don't know what exactly, but I learned that from basically all the people experimenting. Some people getting ads, some people not getting ads. So I knew something was up with that. Might be connected to number of people watching. Maybe if more people watch, there are more ads. I don't know what triggered it today, but it seems a way of defeating it is to go back in time a little bit. And to me, that doesn't matter. I don't care if I'm seeing trains from 3 hours ago or trains that are live. It doesn't really matter. I don't know. It's something that we're still studying and learning from.
So the fight goes on. Your move, Google.
I wouldn't call it a fight so much. It's just because
resistance.
What YouTube says, and I actually heard from YouTube support on this, they say it's a setting from the virtual railfan people. It seems to be a setting they don't know about because they insist that there is no setting. And I think that maybe there's a setting buried in there that Google just kind of set by default in order to generate more ads, and it's hard to find. Because if you go to the railfans over in the Netherlands, same basic premise, but no ads ever. Maybe ads at the beginning, but no ads in the live stream. So there is a setting that isn't set right, I don't think. But it's very hard to communicate that. Anyway, that's all I'm going to say about that. Any other topics that we need to focus on before we open up phone lines?
Just want to welcome, we have a listener from Thailand who has checked in the live chat. So welcome, Thailand.
And look at that. Our listenership has doubled since we started. That's amazing. And we have no ads.
Welcome.
Week.
Welcome to all international listeners streaming over the Internet. And everyone who joined us at WBAI earlier and stuck with us over here on the 2600 channel, Channel 2600 YouTube mm-hmm. site.
Who would like to give out the phone number? Alex, you would? Go ahead.
What is it? It's the area code for Vermont. If you don't know that, you have to figure it out.
Oh, wait. Why are you being so difficult? Just give out the damn phone number.
And then it's the last three digits of a countdown for a space shuttle launch. And then hack. So, you know, we can do it in riddle form here. Or just dial 802-321-4225 to call us.
You got there. That's the important thing.
We got there. I did want to say something, though, since we are on the eve of Thanksgiving here.
Mm-hmm.
And this is somewhat auspicious.
There's a live feed, by the way, of them blowing up the balloons, which if you don't want interrupted by ads every 5 minutes, you might want to rewind it a little
bit.
Is
this for the department store?
Macy's Day Parade thing. Yeah, go ahead, Alex. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, I want to ask you, Manuel, actually, something really tragic and the repercussions of which we are still feeling today happened on Thanksgiving Day 4 years ago. I don't know if you remember what that was.
Oh, you're going to have to give me some more than that. I'm not going to guess tragedies.
It happened in Los Angeles.
I'm still not going to guess it. You're going to have to tell me what it is referring to.
At an airport, and it was when Virgil Griffith was arrested by the FBI.
Okay, yes.
Four years ago. Today, tomorrow. And he's still dealing with this. He's over in Michigan right now in the FCI Milan. I refuse to call it Milan or whatever the hell, however they pronounce it over there. But tomorrow will mark 4 years to the day that he's been dealing with the fallout of that. I think that's something important to bring up. And we should think about him and not forget about him.
This is just for visiting North Korea and speaking at a conference. That's
right.
That's in this country, that's the penalty that you get for that.
And it was really a difficult time. I just want to add, I know there were a lot of people who were worried about him and, you know, what and how to deal with this. His parents were involved. We were really concerned, and it has not been without daily challenges since then.
Can you give any kind of update as to how he's doing in Michigan?
He's doing all right. There's some, you know, bunch of things going on that, you know, he will address with, I think, with the community in due course. But there's some other things that, you know, he's having a lot of challenges. I'll just put it that way. It's not easy. He's okay. But, you know, this is a definitely a challenging time. And, you know, we're really hopeful that there are ways to really expedite his release from there. So, you know, there'll be more to come over the next couple of months about Virgil and how he's doing and whatnot. But I'll just suffice to say, 4 years ago tomorrow, you know, began a saga that really changed his entire life. And he has been in a state of constant suffering.
And so, you know, we should point out that, was it on Thanksgiving or was it on the eve of Thanksgiving that he was traveling?
I believe it was Thanksgiving.
So he was on his way to see his family for Thanksgiving, and that's when they decided it would be a good time to arrest him for going to North Korea against Trump's edict.
Yep.
That's disgusting.
Right. Yep, that, and then, you know, it began just a real saga because he was in Los Angeles, he was flying to Alabama, then he had to be transferred to the Southern District of New York, and that's not an easy transfer to make when you're in custody, to go from L.A. to New York. So that in and of itself was a really trying saga for him. And then the next year, you know, before his trial, he had his bail revoked. There's just, you know, he's been punished and punished and punished for this unfortunate decision of having gone to North Korea. But we should never forget that what he did there was speak. Mm-hmm. He talked about blockchain technology. His talk was entitled Blockchain and Peace instead of War and Peace, right? It was Blockchain and Peace. And he talked about subjects and things that were eminently Googleable. So this has been very, very trying for him.
Yeah, you know, keep in mind, I went to North Korea. Nothing happened to me because I went before Trump, before he said, no, nobody's allowed to go there anymore, which is insane, but that's how it works, apparently, in this country. And you know, I was able to go there and talk to people and share things with them. I'm not an expert in blockchain, but if somebody asked me a question about it, I probably would have answered. People listen to the music on my MP3 recorder. I guess maybe that's hurting somehow by doing that. I don't know. It's just so random, and people like Virgil, who is one of the most intelligent people you'll ever meet and one of the most open and sharing people you'll ever meet, they are the victims. And not being able to enjoy holidays, not being able to see his family, not being able to go on a speaking tour in this country and share what he knows with everyone, which is what he would want to do, it's such a tragedy, such an outrage.
Yeah, it really is. And again, there's going to be more to come. You know, Virgil is not only a dear friend of mine, but he's also a client. And I think that we have become closer through the legal representation that I provided to him and the help, especially after his sentencing, that we've been able to afford to him through my firm. But it's kind of auspicious. I think about it every Thanksgiving that, you know, I remember you calling me mm-hmm. and telling me about this whole ordeal. And I think it'll be a tough day for him tomorrow too. So, keep him in your thoughts.
Yes. And we are very fortunate that you are there to help him. I know it means so much to him to be able to talk to you and help, strategize, plan things out and just have some hope for the future. So, yep. Thanks so much for providing that. And I, you know, hopefully we can visit him, in prison. Maybe we can make a Midwest field trip out of this where we go to, see Ron and his phones and also see Virgil in prison.
I think that sounds like a plan mm-hmm. because, you know, he's just outside Detroit. He's about an hour outside Detroit now. So, you know, we could spend a couple of nights in Detroit and, you know, paint the town red there, go see Virgil, and then I have no idea. Gila is much more familiar with the geography.
Oh, she's going to be the tour guide and the translator.
That's right. The translator.
Later.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I can't understand what they're saying out there. I just can't. I'm sorry.
they have the black cat and the backpack and all that.
That's
you know?
Not even like, close to how they sound.
Oh. No, I don't know what you were trying to do there, but that wasn't it.
Yeah. That's even I know that's wrong.
I'll be all over the craft brewing and third wave coffee. So uh-huh. wherever we go, that's my focus.
All right, we have a phone call, I understand.
Yeah, the phone is occupied at present.
All right,
so
well, let's see who's on the phone. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime.
Hello. Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we hear you fine.
Oh, awesome. I'm just calling about the ads on YouTube. I'm a New York City teacher, so I'm already annoyed by the DOE being in bed with Google with all this stuff that they're doing.
Uh-huh.
But what's frustrating is that the teachers in my school, and my wife's a teacher too, so in her school, you know, we're playing videos off of YouTube during an instructional period. And it doesn't matter when it happens, but right in the middle of the video, you get an ad. You know, you got first graders, third graders, and you know, and it's ridiculous ads that are just popping up in the middle of an instructional period with these people.
Wow, I didn't think of that.
Yeah, it's horrible. And I mean, I let the teachers know that, you know, they don't have to go to Google to get their videos. I introduced them to Firefox. Most of them have never heard of Firefox, never heard of DuckDuckGo. And I show them how to load it up with the ad blockers. I never get ads. So
which ad blocker? Can I ask which ad blocker you use?
I'm using a few of them. I know Uplab Origin is one of them. I got Piracy Badger. There are a few others that sort of, I forgot what it was exactly.
Yeah, Piracy Badger is really good. That's an EFF project, I believe, and there's several other.
And I usually just pick the ones that are either created by Firefox or the ones that are endorsed by them or approved by them.
Uh-huh. But not on Chrome. Chrome doesn't offer that?
Not much. And even if I tried, you know, it's difficult to find anything that's good. We have these smart screens and they have browsers in them. Same thing. You can't even install any kind of ad block on the smart screen.
Are those made by Elmo? Is that what?
No, these are Smart Tech.
Smart Tech is the company. Okay. Yeah, we should have more discussion about that. Teaching devices. I know we've had talks at Hope about such tools in the past. I'm wondering, maybe this will come up. I know this is now ever present in a lot of schools, which is a good thing. But those of us that grew up with blackboards, chalkboards, and dry erase, that's not really what you look at when you're a student anymore.
No, the advertising in schools is just that's so wrong, and I didn't even realize that was an issue here.
It happened, you know, and the thing is, I know, I'm trying to explain to the teachers that you can do this without ads, and they're looking at me like I'm explaining something from some other planet or something, because they're so like exposed to just Google and YouTube and Chrome.
They don't realize they have power to say no, and a lot of people just accept what they're told by big tech companies. Go ahead, Rob.
One thing I always stress to those in the educational sphere is there's one piece of software. It's a piece of free software called YTDLP. That's YT-DLP. And the website for it is github.com/YT-DLP. And what this is it's a piece of software that can load a YouTube video or videos from a lot of other sites that have embedded videos and just download a local copy. And, of course, that local copy you download doesn't get interrupted with ads when you play it. It doesn't disappear if YouTube takes the video down. And I think it can be a very vital tool for teachers and people in fields like that who are working with kids and working in situations where you don't want to be showing ads.
I have a video downloader that I also use with my Firefox, and I can actually download videos and I, you know, I let the teachers know, because sometimes our network goes down, and it's like some people are like struggling to figure out what to do and everything. So I let them know, and they don't seem to grasp the idea of keeping a local copy. But
all right. Well, anything else? Anything else, caller?
No, that's about it. I'm just like, you know, it's like I never hear much talk about like Firefox or DuckDuckGo, and I, you know, when people look at me, when I tell them DuckDuckGo, you can use DuckDuckGo. Oh, but the weird thing is, you can't use DuckDuckGo inside the school building with the school's network. I would have to look at it. Maybe I can call again the next week.
Yeah, look into that. Is it blocked or something?
It's blocked because of, let me see if I can find it. And I took a picture because I meant to bring it up, and I just forgot. But it's blocked. There's some kind of thing that Firefox does, and where it requires some security thing, and it will only connect to other websites with it or something that Google for some reason doesn't do. I'm not sure if I'm explaining it right,
It could be a lot of different implementations, some schemes with different types of security certificates, TLS, or also the way that like ports and different kinds of encryption might be used in one browser because it's got one scheme and maybe Google has a different scheme. That was a great explanation, actually. I think that's I totally understood what you're saying. So yeah, that could be a possibility and an administration policy that affects that browser.
Yeah, so it's like I can use Firefox, but I can't use DuckDuckGo. I would have to go through Google and just use Google on Firefox. But either way, you know, with the ad blockers that I got on Firefox, I still don't get ads. And I never sign into Google when I watch it. So
yeah, that's another thing a lot of people don't realize. They don't have to sign in to Google. They can see things from, you know, independently and almost anonymously.
I try and keep my Google use to as bare minimum as possible, but it's hard getting people to understand that.
It's true. Well, you just have to keep trying to teach them, and I think you're in a good environment for that. Where are you calling from?
The Bronx.
Okay, great. Well, keep up what you're doing and let us know if you learn anything more.
Okay, cool.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
802-321-4225 is our telephone number. That was a good call.
That was great. Yeah. Interesting discussion.
I'd also like to think there's people out there figuring out ways to get around these imposing rules.
How much more learning is going on because of this educator's efforts?
Uh-huh.
I wonder. I mean, just so much distraction and diversion in just getting the lesson in front of eyeballs. But this kind of effort keeps the focus on the lesson and keeps people imagining what the fundamentals, the things they're there for. So that's great. It's really inspiring.
Go ahead, Gila.
We do have a question from a listener who wants to know if you can say more about your trip to North Korea.
What do they want me to say? It was very nice.
The specific questions are, how did Emmanuel get into North Korea? Can he say how he was able to go? Visas, et cetera.
Airplane. Okay, I'll tell you exactly how it worked. First of all, we lived in a different time. Barack Obama was president. Americans were allowed to go to North Korea. It wasn't a big deal. But I also have a European passport. I went as a European. The reason I did that was because Europeans are given more freedom to stay longer and to leave North Korea by train instead of by plane. And, of course, I wanted to leave by train and go into China, visit the city of Dandong on the way back. We all left out of Beijing. That's where the tourist agency was. And this was all completely legit. Everybody was completely allowed to do this. But if you had gone with just Americans, your trip would have been shorter, more controlled, maybe a little bit more hostile. Here, you know, we were able to be more casual with the guides or minders, as they're called, and just see more of the small moments. For instance, I was in a metro station, and I somehow got separated from the group, and I wound up alone in this weird metro station with a bunch of people who live in North Korea, and nobody from the tour guide was around. And I finally found my way out, and there they were across the street. But it was, you know, it wasn't an international incident. It was funny. It was just something that happened, a little mishap. You're able to actually live that kind of a life and experience what it's like to live in that country without being seen as somebody who is hostile. And that's why I wanted to do it, to see what that was like, to see what the people were like. And I got to say, the people, as I found in just about everywhere I've ever been, the people are amazing. They're fine. The system, yeah, I say a lot about the system, but I was there to see the people, and it was definitely worth it. Unfortunately now, I don't know why Trump's rule has not been rescinded. I guess maybe politically it would look bad or something to say, yeah, you're allowed to go to North Korea again. But people always were allowed to go there, and it's just sad that it's one more freedom we don't have. So, I'd like to go back. I'd like to see it again, but I saw it. That's the important thing. I got to do it. Oh, we have another phone call?
We do.
Okay, let's see who's out there. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime.
Hi, Emmanuel.
Is this really Rebel?
Yes, Cliff.
Okay, you know, you're slipping. Hello. You're number two this week. You're not number one.
Hello.
What's going on here?
No, that's an artificial intelligence that's when they call you.
You know, when you call Rebel, it's kind of pointless to play artificial intelligence because it's not going to impress us.
I just want to know, can you find out who's visiting your website? Like, if I go to 2600.com, can you find out who's logging in at a particular time?
Well, again, in your case, we have a light that turns on whenever you connect. No, but you could. You could look for a particular IP in your logs and say, oh, when this IP hits this particular site, let us know. We don't do that. We don't even keep logs. But there are certainly commercial sites that keep track of you. And remember, when you go there, they send cookies and all that kind of thing. Certainly if you're being spied upon, that traffic can be monitored one way or another. So it's certainly possible, definitely possible.
But not an active process for our website. The traffic activity goes in and then goes away. There's no real priority for us to look and, you know, go through all of that. There's plenty of sites that do that, and that's sort of the discretion of how you run your website. But the answer is no, it's not really something that we have meetings about.
Like if a credit card, you're applying for a credit card at a particular bank or whatever, they would keep logs because in case somebody like fraudulently when they apply for a credit card or something, they would say, oh, well, this IP address applied for this credit card at this time, right?
But they sometimes do that. Or if you're trying to change a password, you know, they'll send a confirmation email and give the IP of whoever was trying to change the password. But, of course, you know, anybody who knows what they're doing knows how to go through, you know, virtual connections and, you know, figure out ways to mask where they're actually coming from. So
right. But then, like, if the IP address says Time Warner Cable, they just go to Time Warner Cable and ask them who logged it, because then they would have to say, well, many subscribers subscribe to Time Warner Cable, so then they would have to...
If they had the authority, you know, of law enforcement, they could go to a provider like Time Warner or whoever and say, okay, who does this IP belong to, because we know it's one of yours, and with the right legal process, they could give out the customer name and address.
Yeah, it would actually become an issue of your MAC address, which is the hardware device that is connected to the network using that IP,
uh-huh.
But the hardware itself would determine, and wherever that hardware address came up would be of interest to someone going further into more specifically who and how that traffic
came
about.
Yeah, that would show what particular computer, what kind of phone was actually using that IP at that moment.
It would become a piece in a larger puzzle they might be painting. Maybe that particular laptop and hardware address appeared on a public network, and then it appeared on a cell hotspot, and then it was in another country, and then it came. It can be used beyond just an IP address. So there's many many layers of these protocols, and then many different ways of identifying the origins of certain activity, and that's just one element. It could also be organized based on another identifying factor or another type of service that isn't used on someone's personal computer. I can't think of any example, but there's you know, time of day and different other triggers that you could use. There's so much information.
A MAC address isn't going to show up in logs like IP addresses.
No. But if you were interested at the IP level, you would want to start to become very specific. So there's always something, and those are also things that would be obfuscated if someone was trying to throw off detection from, say, us figuring out, you know, if it was some random Tor exit node or some other weird service layer or site that was being employed, it would make it even harder to get to something like a hardware identifier. But those are all true scenarios if someone was interested, so motivated, and actually doing the legwork.
Did that answer all your questions?
Well, actually, my example is you could get the IP address in a log, and then the IP address will say Time Warner Cable or Verizon. Then you could go to Time Warner Cable and Verizon, and they have to get the MAC address to say, oh, it's from Starbucks, our customer at Starbucks.
Well,
or our customer.
Sure, sure. They would say this IP has been used by this modem's MAC address and so on, and just continue to try to figure out what kinds of where and how certain patterns of activity and traffic came from. But, yeah, totally.
Right. So
then they'd go to surveillance for that Starbucks or wherever that access point had a certain type of activity accessing it for free, and then they could say, okay, who is this person? And then they have a license plate. And, yeah, there's lots of ways to investigate this stuff.
So if there's like a scam website that you're being scammed on a particular website or whatever, you could go to that website's IP address and find out where it is and where, you know, what kind of, if they're in this country.
Okay, all right. So that's more specific to a scenario where, as a consumer, you'd want to. But the thing with websites is they're not hosted and used the same way as, like, a modem, which might have dynamic and a sort of rotating base of modems that are using it. On the hosting side, you're talking about someone that has content up somewhere, but it may not necessarily be associated with the same hardware as the person that is the creator of that site or that maintains it. They could have their own modem connect to an administrative side, but the site itself is hosted elsewhere, like in the cloud or with some web hosting provider. Their IP might tell you where that site is publicly, but the owner and the maintainers of it themselves may have multiple sites that they administer that host, that through the host, their own website.
Right, like if 2600.com was hosted in, by GoDaddy.com, and if your IP address just went to GoDaddy.com, if you do a who is, and then you'd have to ask GoDaddy.com, this is the IP address, who's hosting this website. They would know. They may not tell you, but they may know, right?
Yes. Everyone knows everything.
Alice, you have anything to add to this? Because I know you deal with this pretty much every day.
Yeah, there's lots of ways that you can use an IP address to track somebody down or to identify an individual person. I often do that for anonymous defamers on the Internet, and I have subpoenaed Twitter to get IP address information for people who have been engaged in massive defamation campaigns of various clients. And, yeah, you can always get back to somebody. I mean, if people are using a VPN or if they're using Tor or a proxy, it makes it more difficult, but you'd be surprised at what VPN providers are actually logging these days, and even the ones that say that they are not engaged in logging. But, yeah, it's pretty easy to geolocate an IP address. Everything is an assignment that comes from IANA, or IANA, the Internet Assigned Numbers Authority. And they assign IP addresses around the world to things called ASNs, and they're very easy to look this stuff up. And we have another person joining us at the moment too. And I'm trying to think, this is my youngest son here. Do you have anything else to add to this? You don't know? You want to say hi to everybody? Say hi, man. Well, all right. Well, somebody's being shy with.
Alex, there's nobody there. Why are you trying to fool the listeners?
Yeah, I guess so. You know, somebody's being a little bit shy.
And in fact, why don't you turn the light on in the room? Because we can't see you. You're just basically sitting there rocking in the dark, and it's a little distressing.
Is it really dark on the?
Well, we can't. You know, it's basically we don't know where you are. You haven't told us, and you keep saying these people are with you that aren't there.
Oh. Well, you know, it's what happens.
I can't hear anybody. Can you? Anyone hear anyone? No.
I don't know what's going on. Yeah, yeah. I don't know what he's talking about.
Uh huh. All right.
Gotta yell it. Louder. Come on, louder. Then nobody believes that you're here. You gotta come on. just yell it. Say hi, everybody.
We will give you candy if you do.
Come on. Otherwise, mommy's gonna make you go to sleep if you don't say hello.
Wow. And mommy's going to be very happy to hear that that's the threat you're using.
That's right. Come on, you got to say it. Say it loudly. No?
You have no control over your kids, do you?
Somebody's being shy now. All right. Wow.
No, somebody's being smart now.
I heard something, I think.
Somebody's disobeying their parents.
Might be, yeah.
That's true. Mm-hmm. Now, I will tell you what he's doing right now, though, is that we have a terminal session up in another window here.
Uh-huh.
And he is using the, he loves using the SL command. Have you ever used the SL command?
The SL command in what?
In Linux.
I don't think I've used that.
Well, you know LS, right?
Uh-huh, of course.
Have you accidentally pressed SL sometimes? Well,
I have not done that. I've typed yes at the prompt by accident. Oh, boy, that's a lot of fun.
Yeah, there's a package that you can install called SL, and it's kind of funny. So when you accidentally type SL when you're typing LS, it makes a train go through the terminal session. And it's kind of cool. And so my youngest here is in a Linux terminal, coincidentally, as we're talking. Oh, there you go. See, that's him coughing.
Yeah. That could have been anybody coughing, Alex.
That's right. All right, say goodnight. Come on. All right. Well, everyone thinks I'm nuts. Thanks, Emmanuel.
Gila, why do you have a look of shock on your face? Is there something going on?
No, it's because Rob has just made a train go by on the computer.
So that works.
It does work, yes.
It's choo-chooing across the screen right now.
Yeah. It's pretty cool, actually, isn't it? I mean, it slows you down for a second. You realize you're going too fast. You accidentally did you just install the package?
Yeah, I just installed it over here. I was familiar, but I wanted to show Gila. And also, I just appreciate so much that it's an ASCII art train in the terminal window. ASCII art is a dying art, and I miss it.
ASCII art has been a dying art for 30 years now, so I don't think it's going anywhere.
That's right. Now do SL-F, and you'll be amazed.
Yeah, this is doing wonders for our listeners. Do you want to describe what you're...
Okay.
Gila, I guess you get to describe it then.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's a train, right? But instead of going straight across the screen, it sort of goes up and to the left and out the upper corner. This is so cool!
It is. Now, if
and I probably sound like I'm drunk, don't I?
SL, I mean, there's a man page for it, too, but you can do SL-A, and there you'll find that there are some people in distress on the train.
Oh no, they're yelling help out the window.
Help out the window.
Oh no, do we think Snidely Whiplash has tied someone to the tracks in front of them?
Yeah, this is what we do.
This is fabulous. It reminds me of a program my dad had on his computer when I was little, and the DOS prompt was Sesame, and it would play the Sesame Street song. And it would light up. It was like karaoke. It would light up the words as it played. And it was very exciting. It's a longer train?
Yes, this is dash L. SL-L.
SL-L makes a longer train.
Wow, this is just amazing. But you have to install the package, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, but it's in all the standard repositories.
Okay. You know what? I forgot we had Rebel on the phone. Rebel, are you still there?
Oh,
sorry about that. We just got sidetracked by trains again.
Okay. You should have a video feed instead of the same thing on the YouTube page and YouTube thing. You should have a video feed of, like, you know, you and Gila and Alex. You know,
why would we subject listeners to that?
Well, I mean, why would we subject listeners to the same picture and, you know what I mean?
Well, okay. We have to put something there, but, you know, we're a radio show. We're not video.
Speaking of radio, when are you going to be back on WDAI and, you know?
How do you know we weren't there tonight?
No. I'm saying back in the studio in WDAI.
Exactly. How do you know we weren't in the studio tonight?
Oh, I don't know, because, it doesn't...
What do you mean? Do you keep track of our movements? What if I told you we were all there and now we're all here? You know, we had 10 minutes to move.
Are we taking listener phone calls again in WBAI?
Well, we don't have to take listener phone calls to be at WBAI, do we? That's not the condition.
Oh, so you're back at WBAI Studios.
Maybe we are. I'm not confirming one way or another.
Oh, okay.
I'm not giving out personal information. I refuse to be tempted. You don't know where we are, Rebel. You don't know where we're broadcasting from.
It's true. We're everywhere and nowhere, Rebel.
At the same time.
Kind of like YouTube.
Mm-hmm. Without ads.
Without ads.
Without ads. Mm-hmm. I'd like to mention that the same companies that are doing this, like when you go to a bank, it's all Chase Manhattan Bank now.
And we come full circle. We're back to Chase Manhattan from 1991 or whatever when you first started talking about that.
But in 1991, you had Chemical Bank and then you got the Hanover Bank.
Does anybody call it Chase Manhattan anymore?
No, and you had in Chicago. You had in the Chicago area. You had Bank One in the Los Angeles and San Diego area. In California, you had Washington Mutual. Now it's all Chase. Every bank is Chase now.
That's true. There are a lot of Chases. There's no question about that. But you know, I've been in some places where there are no Chases. It's very hard to track one down. I think Seattle is one of those places where maybe there's like one or two Chases. Is that right, Kyle? Not very many.
Yeah, they have a few, but there's some real empty areas. Mm-hmm. I think downtown corridor and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, Chase deserts.
Yeah.
But they're not everywhere, but I guess they probably will be soon.
It's not as big as it is in New York.
Anyway, Rebel, please wrap it up so we can have room for somebody else.
And everything's a mattress firm. Like, you know what you said? Like,
what?
Is that a bank now? Mattress firm?
Like a mattress firm, like if you want a mattress and bedding and stuff,
right.
A bedding store, you used to go to Sleepy's. Or like on the West Coast, like in California, you go to Sleep Train. Or like in Michigan, you go to...
Honestly?
Yeah, so this company's selling mattresses. Is that really something new?
Yeah, everything's a mattress firm now.
Well, I don't know if everything is a mattress firm. That seems like a real broad generalization.
And, you know, you can find...
You go to Michigan, it's a mattress firm. In California, it's a mattress firm.
Yeah, they have mattresses in all the states, I understand. Even some countries have them.
No,
I'm not sure what point you're trying to prove here.
The store, mattress firm. It's the store. It's not. It's
the
store. You remember Sleepy's? The mattress store.
Yeah, it's still around. I think, isn't it?
No, it's mattress firm.
I think he's saying they got bought up, and it's all the same company that owns them.
I don't know. Somehow that doesn't bother me. I don't know who's typing. I'm muting you guys because people are typing loudly.
In California, it's now a mattress firm. And let's see, what else? And everything's a Wyndham now. All the hotels are Wyndham hotels. Like you go to like Super 8 and
Rebel.
This
is one of the pitfalls of capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
It's consolidation because it tends towards monopolistic behavior,
mm-hmm.
and that's when the fallacy of a free marketplace disintegrates, and we have to come to terms with the crushing realization that we have not built the system we thought it was, but we have told ourselves it is something other than what it is functionally. If you can get past that, you can accept some of these aspects of the various sectors of the economy that we operate in.
Or you can go to a socialist meeting and overthrow the whole thing, you know? Your choice.
I'm just looking at the chat. I'm looking at the chat now, and somebody said that in Nashville, a listener from Nashville is saying, I don't know if he's from Nashville, but he's saying one of the tallest buildings is Chase. It used to be the Bank of the South or something like that. Now it's Chase.
You know... Yeah, okay. I'm not surprised. Banks take over other banks. That does happen.
And there's no more savings banks. You know, like all the savings banks are becoming satlandars.
Well, you don't want to give people the wrong impression. They need to spend money.
Yeah.
So you start saying save and everything falls apart.
But savings banks are now, there's no more savings banks. The independent savings bank is now a satlandar. And now the Ridgewood Savings Bank is going to become a satlandar.
I
don't know what he's saying. I don't even know that company.
Spanish company.
It is. And their ATMs are not very friendly or universal.
You know, fine. The bad ATMs and
everything. When we've been traveling, that's like the one bank. It's just totally useless to try to exchange money.
I'm sure there's other useless banks.
Yeah, and they're coming here to be useless.
Okay.
All right, so any other observations?
No, any other. We're out of time almost. I want to get another call in. Rebel, thank you for calling, and we will take all these issues under advisement. All right?
Okay.
See you next time. All right, so 802-321-4225 is our phone number for anybody else out there. You know, we've lost all the people on Skype line. They're just playing trains over the screen here, and I can't hear anything except the typing. Are they there?
We thought you liked trains.
Not replacing humans. That's I never went that far.
Interrupted train feed in terms of commercials. This thing Rebel's call here.
You don't even have to like roll it back. It's just uninterrupted, no commercial.
Oh, look, I see them. They're little tiny squares. You see that? They're all little tiny squares. I can barely see them.
They're showing us their screen.
Yeah,
and I'm going to answer this.
Answer your damn phone.
There is a phone call
coming. Answer the phone, and if you guys can get the stupid train off the screen, that would be great, because
this is a local, as in New York, call.
We can't cue you if we can't see you. And let us take this phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Go ahead. Overtime, rather. What?
Yeah, I just wanted to ask a quick question.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to know, as far as the...
Please turn down your audio. It's confusing everybody.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I'm driving, so this is on. Yeah,
okay.
I was just going to ask a question.
Be careful.
You have these events. What do you call the events you do in the summertime every
year? It's not every year. It's every 2 years. It's called Hackers on Planet Earth or HOPE Conferences.
Hope Conference, yeah, that's what I was going to ask.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know when the next one is going to be?
We do. It's July 12th through the 14th. Anybody have a magazine handy? Yeah. Well, we haven't done the official announcing yet with the call for participation. That is coming very soon. But it's July of next year, St. John's University in Queens, and it's going to be awesome.
Oh, the same place. The same place it was the last time.
Same place, but a totally different way of using the space. So we're constantly making adjustments and improvements and things like that. It's, you know, we've learned a lot, and we're expanding, and it's going to be really interesting.
Okay, that's all I really wanted to know. Thank you.
Okay. Look forward to seeing you there.
Okay.
And I think we have time for one more phone call, if there is one more phone call out there. Oh, look, our people are back. We can see them again. Welcome.
Yes, we're back, and just mentioning that HOPE is from July 12th to 14th next year, 2024.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to know more about some of our other events, you can find info and past pages for them at hope.net.
The new one isn't on there yet, because we've been so busy, but
it
will be on there very, very soon, we promise.
The next conference is called HOPE XV.
That means 15.
The site itself is organized with Roman numerals on the subdomain. So if you do i.hope.net, you'll go to the first HOPE.
One, yes.
Yeah, and xv.hope.net will go to the current one eventually.
It doesn't go there now, but it will.
It is in production now. There's a lot of activity behind the scenes. So.
But do you know HOPE XV is the sequel to HOPE X, which was the 10th conference?
I heard that come up. Someone pointed that out.
Yeah.
And I think that's really neat.
It is neat. You would think that it was a sequel to 14, which was a new HOPE last year.
Sure.
But no, it's not. It's a sequel to HOPE X.
It's like...
That's why it's called HOPE XV.
Almost as though it was the last time the conference had a Roman numeral in the title.
You know, you might be right about that. You might be right about that.
That's something.
Uh-huh. Do you know only one HOPE conference had the year in it, and that was HOPE 2020. And that was the virtual one. There's all kinds of facts that we can share, and we'll be doing that at HOPE.
I'm so glad that caller asked, and thank you for listening while you're on the road. Impressive with cellular and data. You can hear us on the channel 2600 while you drive, even.
Gila, then Alex.
Speaking of fact about HOPE, did want to mention that frequent listener and caller Tim in Connecticut says St. John's was a very good venue, A+, would go again.
Cool.
So we're looking forward to seeing you next July, Tim.
Thank you. And if Ron from Wisconsin wants to come with a semi filled with phones, there is room at St. John's to do just that. So this is the kind of potential that we have in a space like that. Go ahead, Alex.
Well, I just wanted to push back a little bit, because I think that there were other HOPEs that technically had dates in the title. There was H2K, and then there was H2K2.
Those aren't dates. Those aren't dates. That's like the millennia.
It depends on how you have a narrow definition.
They're eras.
Yeah, that's, you know, nobody walked around saying, oh, this is 2K. you know? They said, hey, what year is this? 2020. If you asked in 2000 what year is it, nobody said 2K. You find me somebody who did that, and I'll agree with you. And the same thing goes for H2K2,
sure, we can,
which was a sequel to H2K, but then, never mind that.
That's right. Yeah. Those are both good conferences, though.
I thought they were references to the Y2K bug.
They were sort of, a good-natured ribbing of that, because we were still afraid at the time that something would happen.
The phone line is still open?
It's still open, but not for long, because we're going to get, make food for tomorrow.
Well, I'm not going to lie. We have snacks. Yeah, the festivities have already started. That's the kind of holiday.
For me, they haven't. Where are the snacks? I haven't gotten any.
The kind
snacks.
Of holiday that us Americans are having.
Wait,
over here.
You keep leaving the room every 5 minutes, and I hear like music and chatter in the other room. Is there something going on there? Because I'm kind of like barricaded in here.
Well, maybe a little, but just don't look at that.
No, I see silhouettes of people dancing in the distance.
Forget all about that.
What the hell do you have going on in there?
It'll be there when we're finished talking to the people.
Well, when I'm finished talking to the people, apparently my job is to stay here and just be a blabbermouth for the entire night. Okay, fine. Go have your party.
Well, and as others are surely getting ready to socialize. Mm-hmm. And be festive. We don't want to keep you from that either. Of course, also, there's tons of travel.
I'm sure there's people that want to be kept from arguing with their relatives.
Maybe you're going to get a phone call in early to talk to loved ones because you can't make it. We want to allow you all of that time. It's not purely our own selfishness, but rather selflessness.
Oh, Rob, go ahead.
Well, while we're on the subject of Thanksgiving and such things, I just want to say, I think I speak for all of us here at Off the Hook, that we're so grateful to all of you out there who continue to invite us into your ears and your homes and pay attention to what we do and who keep supporting us at give2wbai.org. Tuesday of next week, I believe, is called Giving Tuesday, because folks are encouraged to donate what they can after the madness of the big holiday shopping days.
It certainly is. So for those of you who don't know, when I'm not doing this, I am a nonprofit development professional. Giving Tuesday has existed for about the last 11 years because after the orgy of consumption on Black Friday, Small Business Saturday, Cyber Monday, and all of that, take a minute, give back, give to anybody, really. But we on this program are going to encourage you to give to WBAI. As long as we're talking about stuff we're thankful for, by the way, I do want to say that having the chat, having this new community opening up of people talking to each other and talking to us and getting in on the show, I love it. I know we had been a little skittish about doing this, but I think it's worked out really, really well. And I appreciate this opportunity that we have to interact with listeners from literally around the world. People are now chiming in, telling us what Hope conferences they've gone to. We've got someone who attended H2K2.
Oh, wow.
And 2018. And it's wonderful to watch people reacting to what's going on in real time. And also, you know, Rebel chiming in with emergency interruptions. But, hey, it's a big world, and we all make it go around.
He hasn't done an emergency interruption in a while. I don't think you can still do those.
He definitely will chime in the chat and say he has an emergency interruption.
Yeah, but not in real life. The way those used to work.
Life. Not in real life.
You'd be on the phone, and well, not necessarily Rebel, but somebody. Let's say you were on the phone, and people calling would get a busy signal because call waiting didn't exist back then. So they'd call the operator. They'd dial zero and say, operator, can you verify? That's what the phrase was, verify this busy signal. They would call the busy signal, and they would tell you if the phone was off the hook or if there was conversation going on, because what the operator would hear would be garbled conversation. They couldn't make out the words, but they could tell it was conversation and not simply a phone off the hook. People would do that all the time. They were concerned that they hadn't been able to reach somebody for a while. And then, for an additional fee, you could have what's known as an emergency interrupt. That's where the operator, and we have a few of these in old radio shows, the operator would actually burst into the phone call in progress and say, I have an emergency call from so-and-so. Will you release the line? And if you say yes, You hang up and then your phone rings and you say, what gives? You just interrupted my phone call to the person who called. Or you could say, no, I refuse to do that. And she would tell the person trying to interrupt your phone call, that's not going to work. Try something else.
Okay, Emmanuel, I have to tell you something.
Go ahead.
You have just clarified a moment in my favorite movie for me, so thank you.
What favorite movie is this?
All right, I believe in complete transparency. My favorite movie is 1985's St. Elmo's Fire, and there is a moment where one of the characters who has got a girl he's got a crush on, and he's trying to talk to her, so he's like, I want you to make an emergency breakthrough on the line, do you hear me? And, well, now that makes a lot more sense, so thank you.
Glad to have cleared that up. Yes, Alex.
I have been meaning to watch St. Elmo's Fire. That's so funny that it's your favorite movie, Gil. I didn't know that, but I love the song, St. Elmo's Fire. It's a fantastic song.
We sang it in chorus in the first grade.
Wow.
Oh, it's amazing.
Well, you know, we could all get together and watch it virtually at the same time over Thanksgiving. That sounds like fun.
It does, actually. Yeah, mm-hmm. I know.
We have a phone call, Kyle?
Yeah, there is one call, okay. Our last call.
Our last call. And we always have just one call. We only have one phone line. And good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Hey, this SL is pretty cute.
The SL command that, the inverse of LS.
Awesome. Love it.
This is Johnny Fusion. Just wishing you guys a happy holiday.
Hey, you too.
And I did get my article sent off to the article's email.
Oh, awesome. Great. That's wonderful.
It's in the slush pile.
Okay. It'll be processed in due time.
Yes, the lead is being created as we speak,
yeah.
I'm sure.
Yeah, we do typeset in the old-fashioned way.
Yeah, slow and...
Do you really?
What do you think?
I don't think so.
Well, okay. Well, we're just going to have to be mysterious about
it. We like the mystique.
Uh-huh.
Keep some guessing.
But there's no reason why we couldn't if we wanted to.
We handcraft every character.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, but about this little text graphic thing, you know, it reminds me of a lot of the whimsy in computing that's kind of gone away when it's become more ubiquitous, right? When it was more niche, there was like stuff like this all the time. Like, my daddy was a phone freak, and I inherited the gene.
Oh, wow.
And he worked in computers, you know, in the 60s and 70s. And in the 70s, he had a printout of the Star Trek Enterprise done on, like, a teletype or a line printer, made just with the ASCII characters,
mm-hmm.
you know, on that fanfold paper hung up in our home. You know, took like 5 sheets of fanfold paper for a big banner of the Starship Enterprise.
By the way, on many of those Linux systems, there is a banner command where you can make those things, if anybody's interested. Won't print out dot matrix unless you have a dot matrix printer somehow hooked up, but it's still there.
Yeah, but, you know, who has fanfold printer paper anymore?
Probably Ron in Wisconsin, I would bet.
Oh, maybe. And he was so cool.
What did you think of the conversation we had with him?
Well, I came in late, but what I caught was really interesting, you know? Just like, I mean, telephony is like the basis of the hacker community, really, when you get into it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because
yeah.
Like phone freaks were our predecessors.
Oh, they're still very much around, though. They're just, you know, playing with different things.
Yeah, I mean, I built the red box in the 90s that you printed plans of.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think it was around 93?
About that. Sounds about right.
It was called the Quarter.
Yes, I do remember the Quarter.
Yeah.
It was called the Quarter because what a red box did was emulate the sound of a quarter going into a payphone, and that's all you needed to do to convince the payphone that you had deposited a quarter. It wasn't a very good system.
Yeah, that was fun. Like, I built it on a breadboard, and I always meant to put it in its own box, but I literally just took a breadboard to a payphone with a 9-volt battery hanging off of it, and a little button hanging off of it,
mm-hmm.
tried it out. The first phone I tried didn't work, and the operator came on the line, so I just got in my car and drove away.
Yeah, that's always funny when the operator comes on and says, "Oh, I need you to put in a real quarter this time." And, fact, there are, when we release the voicemail recordings or the voice BBS recordings, which we're going to do, we've been promising to do that, you're going to hear a bunch of those where people are attempting to redbox because they're leaving a message and their time runs out because you didn't get very much time. You got like a minute or maybe 2 minutes, and then you had to like put more money into the payphone, and people would hold up red boxes, and you'd hear the operator come on and say, "Yeah, I'm not falling for that again."
Yeah, because, I remember when I was buying the parts for it, like someone had come in before to buy parts for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I had actually seen that, but I hadn't gotten the magazine yet. And so I'm buying the DTMF encoders, and the guy says, "Do you want some color burst crystals for those?" And I'm like, "No, actually, I want some 6.5 megahertz crystals."
Oh, and they know what that means.
Yeah, and that's exactly what he did. He goes, "Oh, I know what you're going to do with this."
Uh-huh.
Like really loud to the whole store. "Is 6.5536 megahertz okay?" Yeah.
Oh yeah.
But it was like a little mom and pop electronics shop with like all this surplus and stuff like that. It wasn't a Radio Shack who would narc on you back in the day.
Rob, did you have something?
Oh yeah, just I have one of those 6.5536 crystals that I still have from back then. It's glued to a shelf by my desk here just as a nostalgia piece. And every so often I explain to people what we used to do with those. it's very fond memories. Also, my favorite response from a snarky operator was someone I knew once played a very bad recording of the tones, a very poor quality recording from a cassette into the payphone, and got back an answer like, "What, did you record that by the train tracks while the train was going by?" Try again.
Alex, go ahead.
I remember that my favorite place to get the crystals from was 1-800-DIGIKEY.
Oh, yeah.
You'd be able to get, crystals. I wonder whatever happened to them. I doubt they still exist, I'm sure.
DIGIKEY?
They're still around. I buy components from them.
Oh, DIGIKEY's serious.
Wow. Well, try buying that from them now. See if you can still do that.
That would be something. It really, really would.
Uh-huh.
You know, I've been playing around with the Flipper Zero firmware recently, and I can't remember which one I had installed, but I was...
Did your kid lock you out of your car with that?
Not yet. But...
Well, it's coming soon, believe me.
I know. Trust me. I do. And but I was so pleasantly surprised to see that when I updated the firmware, one of the applications that was installed along with this updated firmware, I think it was, what was it called? Rogue Master, I think, was the firmware I installed. It came with a blue box and red box emulator, which is very cool. I mean, the tones were definitely way off, but it was just kind of cool to play with it, and you can show your kids the tones and explain to them the significance of those tones that they'll just never hear. They're all gone now. So sad.
Well, who knows? There might when I had that discussion with Bill Squire about analog versus digital, and I was like saying, you know, all the phone switches are going digital now, and the old analog freaking doesn't work anymore. And he was insistent. No, there'll always be a third world country with outdated phone tech that you can get to and get out on lines and stuff. So this is 30 years later, so who knows? But
there really is something to be said for all of that. That interest and the functioning part of it, that it exists. There are ways of doing it, and there are new generations of people that are getting into it. As our guest was talking about, it's the progeny of a lot of the leaders of some of the antique and collectible groups. There's people that we've seen with their own families that they're bringing up in the whole telephone museum world. People that have worked for the telephone company and hobbied on the weekends and shared their knowledge and their love and passion for it. It's hard. I know some of the museums have volunteers. I got really involved in my local museum, took every opportunity I could to help out and volunteer because I got close to a lot of the equipment. I got to hear some of the stories and the knowledge through the Telephone Pioneers and through my local museum. And that was so priceless and so cool because a lot of my friends were involved there. People, you meet people, you have an interaction and a way of interacting without having become an outside plant technician or something where you may have never gotten interested in the pioneers or some of the volunteerism side of the telephone company. It's a great way if you don't end up as a career. And I think the hard part is that those organizations don't have a lot of funding. The projects and the things that we might get excited about, they don't fit in like creating a business model or something like that. But there are ideas, there are ways of being better organized collectively, and I see bits and pieces of it. And just in the conversation tonight, I was thinking about, like, what if there was a bar or a club that had 40 phones there that all worked and on some system, or, you know, ways we can integrate them into new technology that also have functionality and fit in a world that has forgotten about them otherwise. But it takes a lot of money, it takes a lot of effort to build something that's not going to go away. And people start things and then life happens. Those kinds of things disrupt any kind of – it's why it's so rare that we find places that have sort of the old and new and the functionality we're dreaming of and all of that. But to get the shared interests together, to get people talking, and phones are a great way to connect people, there must be a way, I think, going forward that some of these ideas and the passion can have a home, can have a way of forming, a way of persisting in an era that has all but forgotten about it. And it takes time, it takes listening to the wisdom that's there, connecting different groups. But I'm so passionate, I'm really excited for what's possible. And we've talked about different ways of supporting some of these ideas and mostly just being inspired and having imagination for what could be done with old technology like this and sharing it with other people and building something around that. I really am inspired and just hopeful that we'll hear about new stories and new groups and new exciting places that are using this stuff in cool, playful ways, because we're suffering from abundance. There's all this stuff, and it requires some tinkering and energy, power to function. And how do we make that work in the world that has abandoned it? And that's an interesting question coming away from this that I'm going to be wrestling with as we approach HOPE and talk about different displays and ways of getting people to be excited about it.
You know, I think museums are a good thing because a lot of museums have, you know, like these living history reenactors, and we're getting on along in the decades that we could have, like, historical reenactors doing phone tech, like phone operators, switchboard operators, you know, demonstrating how calls used to be made, and even maybe like freaker reenactors, you know, like someone demonstrating the skills, like someone sets up an analog switch. Like, I saw one video on YouTube of some telephone museum where they started off on like a plug board, and they call to this switch, to this more modern switch, to this other modern switch, to a cell phone.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's awesome.
You know, so, like, it was just, like, they did all these stops with using old tech, like 1920s tech, all the way connecting to a modern device.
Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, we had a great demonstration at the old Maker Faires when they were in Queens, and we would have the 2600's phone booth connected to a desk phone that we had on the table, and you could connect the two and have conversations between the two, and it was a lot of fun. And it was at one of those that the bond between those who were phone freaks and those who were working at the phone company, and the shared enthusiasm for the technology was made apparent, because I remember an older gentleman coming up to the table, seeing the Bell truck and the phone booth and everything, and coming up and going, I used to work for the phone company. And I got to tell him, yeah, I used to work against the phone company. It's very nice to meet you, sir. And we had a great handshake and, you know, a laugh, and it was great.
Guys, we've been going out for a very long time, and I think we're about ready to go. Gil, I know you had one more thing to say. Go ahead.
I do, yes. We did have something pointed out from a listener.
Uh-huh.
MK says that there's an Android app called Tone Deaf. That's T-O-N-E-D-E-F, that creates phone tones, all kinds of phone tones, apparently. So people who are Android folks, you should check out the app Tone Deaf in the App Store. And, yeah, Jay Kraft, a club with phone booths would, in fact, be dope. I think about, you know, cabaret, when people had all the – you can make blue box tones. Very exciting. Rob has just opened up the app right here. You can blue box. You can red box.
Oh, that's a quarter.
We're
– That's 2600 hertz. That's some MF tones there.
And there's also just regular touch tone phones.
Well, that's boring.
Not necessarily. You know, I had a book that tells you how to play TV theme songs on phones.
Okay, yeah, you can play songs on phones. I guess that's fun. But, yeah, the real power is MF tones, 2600 hertz, and quarters.
Also, apparently we're hearing that the best crystal frequency for a red box was 6.49 megahertz. So if anybody wants to take issue or exception with that, that's totally fine. But
the closer you get to 6.49, the better the match was to the tone.
Uh-huh. Yeah, but the crystals that were sold, though, were not that specific frequency, right?
That's right, yeah. But you wanted to try to get a crystal that was as close to 6.49 megahertz as you possibly could.
Uh-huh.
This has been such a lovely evening, everybody.
It has. A phone-themed Thanksgiving this year.
I want to go to a telephone bar.
Yeah, you know, that used to be a place in the city.
The best thing in the world.
Uh-huh.
Well, this place is going to turn into a telephone bar pretty quickly here.
All right. Hey, Johnny, have a great Thanksgiving. Good hearing from you. We'll hear from you hopefully next week.
All right. Talk to you then.
All right. Take care.
Enjoy your holiday.
Bye-bye.
And that goes for all our listeners, all our callers. Please enjoy the holiday. And I guess, you know, let's be patient with all the crap going on around us. And it'll be fun. It'll be nice. It'll be what you make it. Right? Yeah.
As everything is. Fun fact again, that's it. The app is called Tone Deaf, T-O-N-E-D-E-F. It's an Android-only app.
Okay.
I don't know what to tell you guys if you can't find it, but yeah. Thanks for hanging in with us, everybody. We really appreciate it.
Email address, oth@2600.com. Love to hear from you. I believe we're back on BAI next Wednesday, 7 p.m. Overtime next Wednesday, 8 p.m. here on YouTube. So thank you, everybody, for calling in, for showing support, for contributing in various ways. And I'll see you guys later. Good night.